Santa Claus. Hey gang, another quick reminder here. Now that the digital show's out of the way and that's all of that stuff, last chance to see us in the flesh this year.
That's right, in the flesh.
Yes, and we are doing Friday the
13th. No,
it's going to be the holidays time, Chris. We're doing the Santa Claus.
A new one.
Santa Claus, the Tim Allen movie where he gets a little fleshy.
Yes. On a day that will live in infamy, December 7th.
That's right.
White Eagle Hall in Jersey City, New Jersey.
That is right.
Tickets are flying, and you're going to want to get them immediately.
That's right. You can get them going right to our website, whmpodcast.com. Little pop-up box is going to point you where to go. If you miss that, and go to the tour page. The info is there, too. I would like to posit that this is David Cronenberg's favorite Christmas movie.
Probably.
Oh, yeah. There's body horror.
There's just, more, I think, more of the scares are in the second one when you get the sheening, the gleaming version of it.
That's disgusting.
But, like, yes, you are correct. And, of course, he is a closet Tim Allen fan. We all know this about Cronenberg.
I wish Tim Allen's head exploded like in Scanners.
That would be great.
That'd be wonderful.
That might be how he goes out. You don't know.
Slam, explode. That's right, gang. A lot of Tim Allen joshing, a lot of the Santa Claus joshing, a lot of praise for Judge Reinhold in this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you better believe he is cucking Tim Allen in this.
It's beautiful.
December 7th, White Eagle Hall, Jersey City, New Jersey, tri-state area. We want to see you out for the final live show of 2023. Tickets available at whmpodcast.com. I'll never let her go. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On Screen Live. My name is Andrew Jupin, and this is our show for Monday, November the 6th. If you can even somehow believe it, we are past Halloween, which means I guess Christmas is tomorrow, if you believe what the CVS in my neighborhood is shilling right now. I hope you all are having a fantastic start to your week. Hello out there, Eric Perez, Busiris87, Will Plock, the 6, like that. Nico Fish, I'm So Rachel, Mike Kling, thanks all for tuning in, y'all. Ludog053, hope it doesn't smell like you inside the van, my friend. Sublime reference. Okay, everybody, get to some birthdays today. Happy birthday goes out to someone we really, really like. Sally Field, the legend herself, turns 77. We got, let's see, who else's birthday do we have here? Ethan Hawke, he turns 53. Let's see. Rebecca Romaine, loving her on Star Trek Strange New World. She's 51. We got Tandiwe Newton, of course, also 51. Emma Stone turns 35 here. And I lost my photo of him, but happy birthday to MST3K's own Dr. Forrester himself, Trace Below. His birthday is also today. Sorry, I didn't have a picture of you, buddy. I had one, and I don't know where it went, but that's fine. Bringing in a couple of my buds to talk about some movies and some box office figures and all that good stuff. First up, the sweater game is on point today. My friend, Steven Sadak.
A happy birthday to that Sublime reference, which I think also turned 51.
Yeah. Well, you know, what are you going to do, dude? I see Lou Dog sitting somewhere.
You got to do it. No,
I got to do it.
I was actually curious, Trace Beaulieu, I didn't realize that Priscilla Presley's maiden name was Beaulieu, and I'm curious if there's any connection there.
Oh,
Probably not, is my guess, but I'm going to look it up.
You never know.
If
that turns into something, you know, be sure to let us know, because maybe he's got a stake to the fortune somehow.
It's entirely possible.
Probably not. Let's see if this other fellow has some information on the estate of Elvis Aaron Presley, Mr. Chris Gabin.
And of course, Thalberg made a blockade of all Soviet film, making him a rat fucking bastard, a son of a bitch who should have been kicked into the ocean several years before he was. Although that was not how he died. He actually died of a terrible disease, but still a kickable in the ocean type fellow if you were to meet Mr. Thalberg in the street. But fuck,
is that why we have the Lifetime Achievement Award named after him?
Oh, probably something like that. I mean, I don't know. Jonathan Rosenbaum is a little ranty. He gets a little crazy out there.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. But he doesn't like him. It turns
Jonathan
out.
Jonathan Rosenbaum, was that the guy from Smallville?
Yes.
Michael indeed. Rosenbaum.
Yes.
Pardon me.
No.
And Sorority Boys, by the way. Let's not forget.
Oh, really? Oh, fuck. You're totally right. I forgot about Sorority Boys, which...
I kind of wish you guys knew what Jonathan Rosenbaum looked like just so you would have that mental image. It's quite something. A long time Chicago Reader critic, okay. Jonathan Rosenbaum. Great critic.
Oh, yeah. This guy's a film critic.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Incredible
sure
writer.
Is.
One of the best there ever was, but yeah.
Yeah.
Not the most matinee visage, I will say.
That guy writes things in the dark.
Uh-huh.
With good reason. Anyway, that's mean. I'm sure he's a great writer.
He is. He's quite great.
I've seen his name on plenty of posters over the years. So
yeah, there you go.
Good man. All right, dudes. We got some numbers. We got a fucking total mystery movie here. We got to dig into it on a segment that we like to call Highest Gross. All right out the gate, it's always a great sign when a dude who's mostly known for comedic roles makes some sort of I'm Saving the Youth drama movie.
Ooh.
A new movie starring Eugenio Derbez. It's called Radical.
Pardon me?
What?
Yeah.
I haven't even heard of this one.
No, from hitter Pantelion Films.
Uh-huh.
It just almost $3 million this weekend here. We're looking at $2.7 million. He's like a teacher on a border town in Mexico. And the kids are having a hard time. And I think he finds some sort of radical new way to approach the teaching.
I see. I mean, you can't keep the Derbez train down. It keeps on moving every year. Another movie starring him, at least two or three starring him will come out.
Never heard of the gentleman. I'm sure he's great. And congratulations on all of your secret movies and all your secret success.
I'm trying to think of something you may have at least heard of that he was in, Steve.
Is he a stand-up? Is that the idea? Is he?
He's a Mexican like actor and comedian. Okay.
Robin Williams type. Like really.
Oh, okay,
like,
got it. Oh, right.
Like geared more towards like kids and teens, but Akeisha has been starting to get more into adult. He did some what's it called? Like a Don Juan type movie not too long ago.
That
started a little
bit. Yes. How to Be a Latin Lover. That was a big one. And also, I think, Steve, if you've been like perusing movie comedies on the Max platform, I know this has floated around a movie called Instructions Not Included.
All right. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a big comedian figure in Mexico.
That's great.
Yeah.
Sometimes, heads over the other side here. I'm trying to think. I thought he was in. Oh, you know, you didn't see this movie, Steve, but you know it exists. He had a role in that live action Dora the Explorer movie that came out.
Indeed.
Yes. He also starred in. There was a remake of Overboard back in 2018. Yep.
That was a gender swapped one. Yeah.
I was curious about Dora the Explorer. Do they do the thing that they do in the cartoon where they're like, "What do you think?"
And then they stare at the screen.
Great.
That's kind of hoping.
That was like
4 hours long. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. There's that movie. It was on only 419 screens. So, very limited release. But hey, to crack the top five with those few screens. I mean, not like it was a blockbuster weekend, by the way. But still, you know, good on him.
Guy's got juice. Doesn't matter.
Someone points out in the chat he was apparently on Jane the Virgin. Yes, that was a thing in the U.S.
Yes. Yeah,
my wife watched it. I did not. So there you go with that. Coming in at number four, a film we'll be talking about a little more in depth later in the program, Priscilla.
Yeah.
Now this is great. This expanded after its limited release. So it was in last week's highest gross. It was on the art market side of things, but it cracked the top four around $5 million and they bumped it. It's funny when like something goes from way limited to wide like this. So it added 1,355 screens, boosting its gross 3,748%.
I have not, I do not have, bless me on this one. I have no relatives that watch Fox News, but or the Fox channel in general, but I have to assume a gut-felt segment, at least one, dealt with the backlash of Elvis in the wake of this, because they have so little to talk about at this point. I kind of feel like this one had to show its face at some point. And that might have caused the bump. That might have done.
I saw it at the Nighthawk in Williamsburg yesterday. Mm-hmm. Sold out showing, another sold out right after it too. So like it's doing numbers, man. People want to see it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And we'll talk
like about Sophia. I mean, we'll talk about it later. But like Sophia Coppola, like she is one of the very few directors working today where like a new movie of hers comes out and it's an event deal.
Yep.
Yeah. So very cool. And then the funny thing is, the rest of the countdown is exactly the same as it was last week. Still right in that third place. Killers of the Flower Moon. Not really killers of the American box office here. No. $7 million. That's another $2 million drop from last week. It is what it is, man.
It was not ever. I mean, like the idea that this would ever make back its money is insane. Like if you ever saw the number, you would be like, no, it's not happening.
The one thing though is the track record that Marty does have is that as his movies stay in theaters, the last like few, I think this record holds, his gross goes up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Eventually. This is not happening.
I mean, like I don't think it's going to happen with this one. Although it is I wasn't here last week. Sorry, everybody. This is definitely my favorite movie of the year right now.
Wow. Okay.
Like quite a margin. I don't think it has that swing like Oppenheimer does. Like,
right.
Oppenheimer's a little easier, goes down a little easier than this.
Yeah, it's a bitter pill. It's a half hour longer. And also, sure. I think that, like, yes, it does matter that Apple, anything makes its money back, but like, does it really matter for an Apple movie to make its money back? Like, what I mean? Like, they're just chucking shit at the wall. They want the prestige.
They already put up the suicide nets around the factories. They're good, baby. They're all dead. Don't you worry. They're fine. They're doing just fine.
They also like have some Oscars from fucking Coda already last year.
True,
that movie. Oh, so like, they're fine to just say, hey, we helped release this very good Martin Scorsese movie.
I have not like forgotten that a movie has won an Oscar so much as I have forgotten Coda has won an Oscar. Like that one just immediately went in the dustbin. Like all the other ones, I'm like, yeah, I kind of remember that was a big deal, but that one just directly in the garbage.
Yeah.
Cause it also felt like a very secret campaign. I feel like it was just such a audience pleasing movie that like they were pleasantly surprised with those results. Like, oh my God. People voted for this,
which we should say, and it's the weirdest. It's funny that we're talking about Coda because that's why Eric isn't on the stream today, because he emailed us this morning. He said, I want to watch Coda. And we're like, you've had a year and a half to watch the movie.
I couldn't really figure this out myself.
I was just like, no, this is the time. I've been waiting to watch Coda. I need to watch Coda right now. And we're like, all right, I guess so.
You got to do what you got to do, man. I don't know. I'm not going to.
We all know about Eric's vow to watch every rendition of You're All I Need ever put to film. He just needs to see that. Like, he just needs to complete the project.
So many people just straight out, like, in the chat, like, where's Eric? Where's Eric? I'm glad you said something, Steve, because I was ready to throw out a classic bend over and I'll show you.
Right up.
That's where Eric is. Here we go at number two. Taylor Swift still doing her thing. I think it wasn't just her birthday the other day? Maybe not. I don't know. But here we go. $13.5 million in week four. Still a nice number for being out in the theater for a month. And now, even though this is number one, this is not good news for the adolescent fans of this video game franchise. Five Nights at Freddy's. Still sticking to number one, but with a paltry $19.4 million, you are looking at a fall of 76%. That's Quantumania territory, friends.
Yeah.
I do have to question, though, having seen the film,
Yeah. I do. Anybody who tells me it costs more than $5 million to make, I have a question. Like, this thing, it looks like crap. Like, A, but yeah. like, B, it's like Josh Hutcherson's your major get. Like, come on. Like, he's good. I like the guy enough, but like, that's yeah, yeah. it. Like, it couldn't have cost that much to make this.
Maybe it's, you know, because I think the Henson Company did them creature effects there with yeah. the puppets.
Maybe.
Maybe that's, you know.
Maybe, but like, even they don't look great. I mean,
no, they look like shit.
Speaking of Hutcherson, stay tuned for a secret movie entry with him and Morgan Freeman. This Ooh. Movie that's out. It's have we you watched the trailer, it. Chris? We talked about it? Or?
I think two episodes again, we brought up the secret Morgan Freeman, 57 seconds or something
yes,
like
you,
that.
Yes, you go back. He could go back in time for
57 seconds.
Only no. 57 seconds. Yeah. That's the thing.
No!
It's like, I went back in time 57 seconds and like he does some like gambling and he wins. And he's like, hey, I'm Josh Hutcherson. I'm having a good time. And right. then it's like, but then like my sister was killed years ago, yes. by the way. And now I'm going to use my new magic powers to avenge her with tech billionaires. It seems so stupid.
What?
Morgan Freeman, I believe, is the tech billionaire. I may be correct, but I do believe so. It has heavy duty Limitless vibes from yes. the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As many of these films do for reasons I will never understand.
Limitless, a movie I did not hate. I'll throw that out there. I've never thought about it again, but I didn't hate it.
I turned it off. I was just sort of like, I got it. I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
It will show up on this show at one point because it is ridiculous. Sure. But yeah, it's the Morgan Freeman show of all these. Like, he just pops in for like a day, like literally a day shoot, or maybe like a week at absolute most. And then he's right. out of there. And he does this with John Travolta usually. But this time, he does it with Josh.
But that's going back to Friday Night. That's where I want my Josh Hutcherson to be, is in secret sure. movies with Morgan Freeman.
Yes.
Tops at the box office. What?
He hasn't experienced this since being a supporting role in Hunger Games exactly. films, I would wager. And this feels like I've seen Five Nights at Freddy's 2. For all intents and purposes, it should be a secret movie, man. I'm happy that this like cheap looking piece of shit movie has made so much money. That's great. It is. No, it's like, cause I don't want everything that succeeds at the box office to be like shit that I care about. Like
sure.
Paw Patrol sure. was doing yeah. great. Good job, puppies. Like whatever. But this should have been in any other universe, in any other timeline. This is a movie that quietly farts its way onto the Apple and Amazon rental platform.
Yes, yep.
And you're like, and what? You never hear about it again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Certain communities, the video game nut jobs will absolutely have their day with this movie. I get that.
I've seen some like frame grabs from the games and stuff. Looks like shit. Also, yeah.
it
looks like I would not want to play it.
Pretty old. I forget when it came out, but like, yeah, it looks like shit. And also, like, I can't completely ditch it just because, like, I'm glad when Matthew Lillard's getting money. Like,
sure,
he's the best part of the movie. Yeah.
He's the one that draws you in the most out of all the people in that movie.
And you're kind of watching it like you wish he was in a better movie because he is so good and he's bringing it to Five Nights at Freddy's. I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about House of Usher a little bit later. Get Matthew Lillard into the fucking Flanagan-iverse.
Absolutely.
That's what I think that stable of actors needs at this point, by the way. We'll talk about that. But yeah, get Matthew Lillard in there. It would be awesome.
Yeah.
Looking around the art market really quick here, the Meg Ryan directorial effort, What Happens Later, her and David Duchovny and her return to rom-coms here.
What Happens Later is I forget this movie ever existed.
Precisely. Really bad title. Bleecker Street putting it out. Do I got a screen count here? Columbus Sailed the Ocean Blue, 1492 screens. That's what we were on.
Excellent.
Okay.
For $1.6 million, not super great.
So
I will rent this movie.
I was gonna say, had you already gone out to see it, and we're gonna talk about it later? Or
no, had a busy weekend. Did not get to the theater, the movie theater that is. But it will be a comfortable couch rental.
Yes, mm-hmm. for our good old David Ducks.
But also, like, quack, 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 Scully. No, but it looks like, you know, there's like a snowstorm involved in the movie and everything. And much like the holdovers, I'm like, it was like 70 yesterday. Like, I can't be watching snow movies, folks. I'm sorry.
Well, Alexander of Pain cannot account for fucking global warming.
That's like, true.
I can't put that on him.
Well, I mean, he doesn't decide anything. Fucking Focus Features, Bleecker Street Films. Look at the fucking calendar. Look at the heating rock that we were on. Bump this shit back. I'm tired of it.
Sure.
Sorry, Steve. What were you saying?
No, I mean, I guess... that's why it's a period piece, right? It's because that's when it used to. Remember when it used to snow?
Yeah.
You remember that? When it used to right. snow?
Actually, that's fair. So, like, the holdovers is like, what, the late 70s, the 80s or something.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting snow in early November back then in the Northeast. So maybe.
I just saw the trailer to the holdovers again yesterday. And the end thing where Giamatti is just like, don't do it. Don't do it. And then they close on his face like, I'm like, I need this movie in my life immediately. Immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Obviously. It's getting to a point where, like, I don't know that I'm going to be able to wait for the weather to get its ass in gear.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to just, like, pick the, when it gets to, like, the lowest of the low 60s and run out to the theater to check that out. Oh, whoops. Opening different programs here. All right. There we go. I'll report back about what happens later. Much later when I see it. So that's that. By the way, guys, did you know? So if you missed that digital live show we did, that's gone.
It's gone forever.
Unfortunately. We did. This always happens. We got an email and it was like, hey, We Hate Movies, who doesn't control the technological platform that your show is on.
Yeah.
I bought a thing and then I forgot to watch it for an entire week. Can I still watch it? The answer is no.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's how these things work. But y'all have one more chance, especially the folks in the tri-state area, to catch us live IRL this year before we're off for the holidays. We have, I love this, Philippe whipped this together, us wearing Santa hats, a really fantastic live show coming to Jersey City, New Jersey, where we're talking...
Oh, there it is.
Santa Claus. Look at that.
Look at that fake fupa. That fake fupa.
Yep. Fucking stolen valor right there. I don't know. That actually looks like he's got a little bit of camel toe there, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a little business going on there.
No, there's butt in front. That's butt in front right there.
Yeah. Oh, shit, dude. Like, society has got a fucking front bottom.
It's going to be so fun. White Eagle Hall is an amazing venue. Jersey City is an amazing place to hang out. You know, you just show up, literally get a nice dinner, go to a bar, get a cocktail. You'll have a lot of fun in Jersey City.
And if people don't know, like, you know, our city friend folk and whatnot, and all our audiences around the area here, like, if you're not unaware, Jersey City, it's like right next door to Manhattan. It's the city.
It's close.
You get there by public transit, all that shit.
It's closer than a lot of parts of Brooklyn, to be quite honest, depending on where you're going.
That's true. I think it's actually going to take me less time to get to White Eagle Hall than it will the Bell House or something like that.
Absolutely.
It could, yeah.
So right now you can head over to whmpodcast.com. There's a pop-up menu there that'll tell you all about where to get tickets. Those tickets are flying, by the way. I think actually the VIPs might already be sold out. So you do not want to get sold out of the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is a movie I know I've seen a bunch of times. It was a holiday staple in the house. Mm-hmm. And we do get off on a tear making fun of Tim Allen, do we not?
Nah. I will be sharing many stories of him fucking up Michigan as he, as he is constantly doing all the time, every time he enters the fucking state.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. WHMpodcast.com. Check that shit out. Now, you know, we're talking about, like, I didn't know that this Eugenio Derbez movie came out. I didn't know that this other movie was coming out. And I get it. There's a lot of movies out there. And the only possible way you can keep track of them is to try to stay up on the coming attractions. And we do that in an appropriately titled segment we like to call Trailer Segment. So we got two here that I got to say, I'm kind of excited for both of these. Folks at home, if you want to watch along with us, right below in the show description, I've got the links to both of these here. The first one up, I got to tell you, just until this trailer dropped, I didn't know this was like a thing that would be happening, but this Marvel Studios Echo which I guess is a Daredevil spinoff, Steve?
Yeah.
This, well, it's a spinoff specifically of the Hawkeye show, oh, if you remember.
That's right.
That's
on that.
When they wedged the Kingpin into that at the end there, which, yep. I mean, sure. I actually really like that Hawkeye show quite a bit. It's one of my,
me too.
It's my favorite of the Marvel shows that have released live action anyway.
Mainly because it's like three parts.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It's not a huge commitment.
It's quick. It was a Christmas thing. It came out on Christmas. I had COVID. Yes. It was the best. I was just like, give to me. Yes. Yada, yada, yada. Yeah, Echo is like a thing in the late 00s there. Brian Michael Bendis did a really long Daredevil run, and he created Echo, and she came from that. And I believe someone can yell at me that I'm getting that wrong, but that's kind of where this character comes from. And that's why she is directly tied to Kingpin, et cetera, et cetera.
And she is a deaf Native American woman,
yes,
who can echo or mimic physical motion that she sees, like immediately processing it. And so that makes her a great adversarial fighting partner, because she can mimic what you're doing and learn it really fast, which I think is rad. She like criticizes Hawkeye on the show for like wearing a hearing aid, I remember.
Oh, that's that's right.
She's like, you'd do better without this. And she fucking, I feel like it's got to be a decision for Hawkeye only, Miss Echo, but like she fucking stamps on this dude's hearing aid and breaks it on that show. Like,
pretty rude.
Why don't you let him decide? anyway, so she has her own show here. I think this is also, it's very short commitment. I think it's only like six episodes or something like that, which I got to tell you, folks.
They got to do something. They got to do something. I don't know, man. They got to do something. You read that fucking piece? I read it. Yeah. Do something, you stupid idiots.
I'm excited to see. Let's see what this trailer looks like.
All right. So we're going to take a look here at Marvel Studios Echo. Here we are. I got the trailer pulled up. By the way, both of these do not contain a trailer for the trailer, Chris Cabin. Okay, so you guys are safe. We're all safe.
Still gonna be angry.
okay, here we go. Marvel Studios Echo trailer in 3, 2, 1, go. Okay, little kids getting watched from a car, terrifying. Guy making fun of a deaf kid, terrifying. Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Did Fist just watch Mystic River? What's going on?
oh, yeah.
Has there been better Marvel casting since this?
No.
Yeah.
No, D'Onofrio's a bit. And just him just beating the shit out of people. I love it.
Yeah.
This looks like it's a little more on the violent side of things. Look at that hand.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're trying to tell you, man.
Okay. Which, you know, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Make America skate again. Come on. Oh, dead relatives.
Uh-huh.
Always happens.
To believe it's...
You have so much pain in you. You.
The dead guy is the dude from Fargo, that the Native American actor who's in everything, who's great.
Oh, yeah. Did they just show him like briefly, I think?
Yes.
Well, I just saw Lily Gladstone's mother from Killers of Flower Moon is in this somewhere.
Got it.
This looks like a lot of fun. This looks really specific.
We are killing people.
You and I are the same.
Oh, yeah.
Woo.
So, who's the monster?
Dude, him with this missing eye or fucked up eye, I love it.
You're the monster, dude. You're named Kingpin. Come on, dude.
Look at you.
I had trouble with a LASIK surgery. If I ever find that doctor, I'm going to throw him into a trash can.
Now, Mr. Fisk, you just had your surgery. You can't cry for 10 days. My son's friend is picking me up.
My son's friend. He stopped short. I that looks actually really good. You know what I mean?
It does.
Like, for all, you know, and please play that on a loop every time. You're like, you guys hate Marvel all the time. And Yep. That's not actually true. I'm the only person in the world that liked Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, so you got that going for me?
You're just talking about me, guys. Like, everybody else is very normal. I'm the weird idiot who just fucking hates this shit and just saw that. I was like, oh, they're going to do a Daredevil show. Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Okay. I mean, it just looks like that to me, and the fighting style looks very much like everything else, this, like, the John Wick fucking style. Like,
but didn't they fuck up the Daredevil show too now, Chris? Isn't it a thing where they have to redo the whole thing because they just did it wrong?
I forget what the reason was, but they fucked up something. I forget what it was, but they did something went wrong with Firstborn or something like that.
Born Again.
Born Again, yeah.
Did they lose a bunch of footage cards? Like data lost?
No, it's just like something, like they wrote it wrong. They filmed it. And then someone was like, well, that doesn't fit with what we're doing, which seems to keep happening with them, which is sort of like something. And like,
how could you pay attention? How could you keep it all in your brain?
Yeah.
You're asking for too much. That's why this is fucking up so hard, is because you keep on asking for it to expand. And it can't. It can't do it.
I've got a request in the chat, and I'm gonna Hell's Kitchen, Hell's Kitchen.
I forget what but like that was even part of the fucking variety piece. Yes. I don't even think they brought that up.
No, yeah,
that was a fuck up that happened too late. They already went to press with the article about the rest of the fuck ups, and so
it's just so weird that they can't keep their shit together, and that they, because like reshoots are reshoots, and that happens for everything. You know what I mean? Like everything has reshoots, and you know what I mean. Everybody probably spends too much time worrying about reshoots, but these are just like, oh no, it doesn't. The branding didn't fit here or whatever. And I mean, like, A, you're probably, that's too many cooks for sure. And
yes.
B, it's a thing where like, maybe you shouldn't have to get sign off from 30 executives before you go to film. And, or if that's the case, get the sign off from the 30 executives. Like, you know what I mean? Like one of those things has to work out for you. You can't do both.
Like we've already waited all this time for the next Daredevil thing. That Spider-Man movie kind of gave you a little taste, and that was cool. But like, I don't mind waiting a little longer, but like, you know, just make sure you got all those signatures, or make sure like everybody's on the same page. You're dealing with a multi-billion dollar, you know, bit of property here. Also, like, I don't know. We get into this on our Batman Begins episode, which is coming out in a couple weeks, but just the whole idea, I'm just thinking in terms of like this, the Jonathan Majors shit, and like the complete refusal to just like recast and get on with our lives. Just do it.
I mean, I think for them now, they have a very, it's similar to a lot of what politicians do. Like if you do anything but admit you fucked up.
Yep.
Do anything else. You can look like an idiot the whole time. Just make sure you don't admit it, and then you're fine. And to a degree, I understand that thinking, but like also it makes you look ridiculous. It makes like anybody who was even slightly on the fence about your brand lose any faith they had. Like they just are like, well, if they can't figure this out, and then I read the Variety piece, then like, fuck, what am I still on board for?
Also, like it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have just created a cool little Daredevil like standalone show. Who gives a shit?
I'm looking, reading it right now. Daredevil Born Again is undergoing a major creative overhaul. Variety said they filmed less than half of the series shot prior to the strike. Some of that stuff will be used, but a lot of it won't. And they're they've released the writers and directors because it just doesn't fit what they were looking for. And it's just like, how does this keep happening to you?
Seriously.
And also,
that actually,
Daredevil seasons 1 through 3 are amazing. Season 3 specifically is great.
1 and 3 are the ones I really love.
I think I'm just going to have to like go back through it from the beginning, actually just finish it, get my Daredevil fix in. Speaking of it, like more mature Marvel content, Daniel Schumacher asks, if you have any hope for Blade, not after that fucking Variety story.
No, I would love it if something would work, but I don't think it is. Like
it sounded like they were making a Blade without Blade, which you can keep that, whatever that would be.
Which I'm glad Mahershala Ali was like, then I'm going to walk. Like, you know what I mean? If it's going to be this, which is not what I signed on for, then I walk. And they're like, oh, no. And now they're trying to find a direction that he will enjoy and everybody will enjoy. Or I would say anyone could enjoy.
I would wager a direction that everyone would enjoy is a Blade adventure that stars Blade.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And after that, it's just a guy in sunglasses killing vampires in cool ways. That's your movie. And also, let me point out that whole thing about it looked like there was going to be like a team and Blade's like helping them, whatever.
Birds of Prey.
We saw that situation. That's Blade Trinity. He's got a team in that movie, and that idea sucked hard. And Wesley didn't want to do it. And you can tell in the movie performance, and that's the movie where he fucking refused to
close his eyes,
whatever the fuck it was. Like, just have a dude give Mahershala two things, a sword and a pair of sunglasses, and that's all you need for the movie.
Well, because that's the funny thing is you're overthinking. You're 80% there. You got Mahershala Ali. That was the hard part, I think. It's like finding, wow, who could do Blade after Wesley Snipes? Ooh, that's going to be tough. Mahershala Ali is a great idea, and he's really game to do it. Then just put him in a Blade story and give him a fucking sword. Let's call it a day.
But then, I mean, you're talking like this and you're not even talking about how he ties into Hawkeye and the Hulk. And I don't know.
Or
Echo, now Echo.
Very specifically ties into, which I'm sure is absolutely going to happen, Jon Snow as Dane Whitman, the Black Knight. Remember that at the end of Eternals?
Yes.
Mr. Whitman, here's a sword for some reason. I'm Blade.
Sure. That the Eternals world into that. Who else does he interact with, Steve? Doesn't he have some adventures with Spider-Man here and there?
I'm sure. No, but I'm just saying in the MCU, he's only given him that stupid sword. That's it.
Right. That's all he's done. And was it even Mahershala's voice off camera, or was it just a guy?
It was rough. Mahershala, at least. Yeah.
All right. There's at least that. But whatever.
One last thing, Steve. Do you know, was the new Daredevil supposed to come out around now?
I think so.
I don't want to indulge conspiracy much, but the fact that they have a very Daredevil looking show that's their own show, I don't know.
Echo show?
Yeah. It's just coming out at this time rather than the thing that they took from Netflix and was a halfling anyway. I don't know, man. They're so obsessed with their brand being their brand at this point that I don't put anything above them.
For whatever it's worth, Chris, if that's true, if the Daredevil show was supposed to be out now, this Echo doesn't launch until January the 10th.
Yeah. Well, I meant like a winter open. I didn't mean tomorrow. Uh-huh. I meant a winter opening. Yeah. Because I don't know what, I don't remember even when the actual date was supposed to be.
No, I don't remember.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. That looks cool. I love the thing at the end of the trailer that's like, be sure to switch your Disney Plus fucking profile to mature audiences so it'll come up on the platform.
Oh, definitely.
Real
Echo's
dumb.
Getting some dick, maybe, or giving it. I don't know.
Do I have to do that if I want to watch anything that's like adult tinged on Disney Plus?
I would imagine.
I'm aware of this.
It's like a preferences toggle. Yes. I forget. I did it for something already.
That's how you can watch Daredevil on that channel.
I think that's what it was. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I was like, I'm going to get ready to rewatch this, and I toggled it on and still haven't rewatched it. Anyway, next thing up here, I am a big fan of this franchise, and just keep making them. I'll keep seeing them. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
I was shocked. I had no idea that they were doing this. I haven't watched the trailer yet, so it's going to be brand new to me. This is a sequel to the Matt Reeves movies, or this is not?
It's set in the same timeline. It's years after the last movie with Woody Harrelson and everything like that.
Okay.
Which I still haven't seen, and that's my own fault.
Good movie.
It's good, man. When we did that Planet of the Apes We Love Movies, I watched that entire franchise for April last year. Mm-hmm. And I remember being kind of middle of the road on that last one after I saw it in theaters. I rewatched it. It's awesome. It's a really, really awesome breaking out of jail kind of movie, pretty much, with apes. It's solid shit, and Woody's great. So this is supposedly years after Caesar, like what's his face, isn't in it? Circus.
Yeah, Andy Circus.
Uninvolved. So anyway, so here we go. This is from director Wes Ball, who's done a bunch of stuff. Comes out. Oh, this is the big, it's a big Memorial Day movie. That's what this is.
Okay.
All right, so here we go. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes in 3, 2, 1, go.
When I sleep, I see strange things.
I love this new imprint, 20th Century Studios.
Yes.
I love them.
Yeah, they really came out of nowhere.
Not memories.
This all looks really nice, man. Abandoned buildings covered in trees and shit.
New things.
Is this bird walking? No, it's not.
I see everything.
Oh, look at this. This ape is a falconer.
I love it.
That is not everything.
We're getting better and better with this ape motion capture, by the way. It keeps looking better.
Okay.
Looked like Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Brick for a minute there.
we're getting the remainder of the humans. Love that.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Good weighted net, dude. Oh, yeah. Oh, apes with electricity? Yeah. Yes.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're helping people. Oh, looks like some sort of lost library.
Love it.
Oh, that's a telescope. It's an ape looking in a telescope.
Oh, big ape war.
Oh, yeah.
Love King Ape. Love that guy. I don't know who he is, but he kind of rules.
You know who that might be, Steve? Is Kevin Durand, the Australian. Oh, okay. I think he's Australian.
Yeah.
Did you say blob?
That guy?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I am. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that could be who that is. But yeah, it's like, it's looking like a great, we've got factions of apes. Some are super evil.
It seems like they're trying to, what do you call it there, bridge the timeline to finally, like to get to where, you know, we know the Planet of the Apes to be. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it looks like we're kind of backing up into the front of the 1968 movie.
Yes.
Which, you know, I feel like once that happens, then it's done. Like once you see a Charlton Heston-esque guy crash land at the end of one of these movies,
it's gonna happen.
This new franchise run is done.
Yes. I'm a little worried that it is Wes Ball in charge of all of this and who is not a Matt Reeves level guy. He's the Maze Runner guy.
Sure.
And who, I mean, that's like, I kind of get why you go with him since Matt Reeves is dealing with Batman currently. Because Maze Runner is a lot of forest grown cities. It is a lot of heavy CGI stuff. Like I get why they would pick him. I'm a little apprehensive, but the brand is enough for me at this point. I'll go see it because I love them. I love them.
Yeah. That is a great point, though, Chris. Literally, his only feature directorial efforts are 3 Maze Runner movies.
He was doing visual effects for Michael Mills for a while, I think.
It just looks like for beginners.
Beginners? Okay. I thought it was. Yeah. I thought they were with each other for a while. But yeah, that's it. That's been it. So we'll see.
So, you know, I don't know. I didn't see any of those Maze Runner movies. I know they're more like YA stuff that we'd get yelled at for not liking. So
just leave it alone, man. Just keep moving.
Get a life. So, you know, I don't know. Always willing to give apes a shot. Because they're great. They're great. Sad as fuck movies. Also, watching that trailer like, so where does the emotional devastation come in?
Oh, it's coming, baby. They have to. That ape is going to be sad and it's going to make you sad.
It's always actually kind of fascinating when you see people like on Letterboxd watching like those OG movies for the first time and just being like, oh my God, the end of that movie was so depressing. I'm like, keep going. It doesn't each get one, any happier.
They're all pretty bad on that front.
So speaking of incredibly sad, let's get into it a little more. Priscilla, now we talked about this briefly in our New York Film Festival coverage, but it's out now, of course, and Steve, you got a chance to see it finally, so maybe you start us off with some thoughts about the new Sofia Coppola.
I was, you know, it kind of reminded me that I had for no reason specifically fallen off of the Sofia Coppola train. I haven't seen her last couple of movies.
Okay.
And then watching this movie, I was like, oh, I miss these. I was like, oh, I miss her. I miss the self-assuredness, this sort of contained world, the ability to sort of, and I think that this is a really specifically interesting movie for her to make. I always like, you know, Marie Antoinette, people question why she made it. It's very obvious. Like, she grew up incredibly rich. She grew up like the way that like wealth and fame cuts both ways. She's always uniquely, especially for women, uniquely poised to talk about. And that's what this movie is. And it's also incredibly odd. Like, we're really, it's fascinating the way this movie complements Elvis, the Elvis movie, and also talks about it, but also steers clear of it. I mean, I don't know how aware she was of what all that movie was going to do, but it does sort of just almost fits like a key into a keyhole. Like, you know what I mean? In so far as, I mean, like, the portrayals of Elvis are wildly different. The portrayals of Priscilla are specifically different. Priscilla doesn't have a ton to do in the Elvis movie. But you know, it just sort of like, it's fascinating how much like the Colonel isn't in the movie, and I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think that like I think it's a really effective drama. It's really I think the whole like gilded cage element of it, like that you see, you don't see a lot of Graceland in the Elvis movie, and you see a ton of it here, but from this area where she can't leave. You know what I mean? And like,
yes,
she's kind of just mulling around the grounds. Also, a really, and I'll turn it over to everybody else. I thought the performances are fantastic. I thought the weird, the size difference thing is really important. And it's really interestingly, like the way that she films that is like, she makes, because usually you would want to put, I'm imagining, I just saw the movie, Hayley Spaney is a smaller actress, but and usually that would be fine. You put her on a apple cart so she can lock eyes with her lover. No, it's all about the size.
Yep.
It's all about the power imbalance. It's all about the age imbalance, which is really, really uncomfortable, to the point where that one woman in just one scene, like when she comes to the first party, that girl's like, "Oh wow, she's just like a little girl, isn't she?" And I'm like, "Yeah, dude, that's fucking weird."
Mm-hmm. Not like is indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, the whole portrayal of Graceland as this not fantastical, legendary place, but actually like a very muted, drab looking prison is awesome. And like, you know, I'm spending so much time in Elvis's bedroom, and it's all these like very deep, dark colors. The shades are always fucking closed. Yep. Like, how claustrophobic can we make the property of Graceland feel, you know? And like, it is just so spot on. I truly love it. This detail came out that, like, hey, man, good for you. If it helps you with the performance, fine. I think Jacob Elordi as Elvis is really, really great in this movie. He's fucking terrifying. He's very a fucking good, selfish douchebag. It's everything that, you know, this movie is
very
telling you. You
selfish,
know what I mean?
Sexy douchebag. Very important. Like, he does. Sure. He's a very, he does have, and it's a very different Austin Butler thing, but he does have like this sexiness where you're like, oh, that could be the most famous guy on the planet. Even though, you know, he's
I'm
sorry, your detail.
Well, this whole thing that this story about, he was eating a pound of bacon a day, like while filming like get into the Elvis-ness of it all. Like,
all right.
I don't know, man, you're not in the movie that much. Like, if Austin Butler wanted to eat a pound of bacon a day, like, I'd get it. But like, Elvis is not the focus of this movie. There's plenty of scenes without Elvis in it. I feel like this dude kind of just wanted free bacon.
I think I'm hearing some jealousy that this man can eat.
Absolutely.
Be celebrated for eating a pound of bacon every day.
Celebrated and didn't pay one red cent for that bacon.
Oh, yeah. And he still looks like Jacob Elordi after all.
Well, and then also that, after all of that, he still looks like that. Well, that
like, exactly. I don't even think, like, well, I think the difference in Elvis is very pointed. Like, he's sexy in this. As much as he is also dangerous and, like, overwhelming and controlling and all that, his whole thing is sexiness in this. Whereas that is not what I thought with Austin Butler. Like, the sexiness of him did not, it was the pizzazz. It was the flash of him. That was what was interesting. And what I'm very interested in how this does mirror and compare to Marie Antoinette in a lot of ways. So this is American Marie Antoinette, essentially, as compared to French. And like, it also speaks to Sofia Coppola. What got Marie Antoinette into her station in life? Her parentage.
Yeah.
Where she like, and that is what got her her first fucking shots at stardom. And like, what is it now? It's your aesthetic. We want your aesthetic, and we like that you look like this next to him, and that you kind of look like a schoolgirl, because we want schoolgirls to think they can marry fucking Elvis and like do this shit. They want that shit. So like, I think it speaks a lot to what she feels about her, the industry as well. I mean, we'll, I think we'll talk next week about when everybody's gotten a chance to see The Killer. I think we'll talk more about how I think Fincher is doing a very similar thing in that movie. But I was just, I'm still thinking about this movie. It's been since I haven't seen a second time yet. I'm looking forward to it. But I love On the Rocks. Even the last one I thought was really good too.
On the Rocks. So I don't have her IMDb up here. I guess I should, but On the Rocks. And then what was before that?
Was that Somewhere or Sometime?
The Murray Christmas, I think, was before that, maybe.
Sure, but I don't think Steve was counting that as like features of hers that he hadn't seen.
Sure. I think
I watched that very Merry Christmas every Christmas Eve, by the way.
Oh, really? I haven't seen it since.
Because it's like, you know, the bar that they hang out in is the bar Chelsea and I go to every New Year's Eve. Yeah. So there's just like that kind of shit. Oh, so Steve, did you not see The Beguiled?
I did not see The Beguiled.
Good. Really good.
Yes.
Just these movies just kind of happened, and I think they all like kind of underperformed Oscar wise, so they weren't really high on my like, oh, I need to watch this at the end of the year kind of a thing, etc.
Beguiled got totally swallowed up. That was like a focus movie, and then On the Rocks was Apple.
Yes,
that's Apple before Club. Apple figured out the theater matrix problem.
Yeah.
So that movie like came and went. I think I even streamed it on Apple, and like
I
go to the theater to see her movies.
One small hit that again, another thing that this movie focuses on, the other movie doesn't, which I think is a really interesting specific, is Elvis's hangers-on. Like, they're in the other movie, but like they were so important to his life. He was such a loser about it, and you know what I mean. Like having them. Like the fact that he's always got to have these dudes around him, like grabbing his ass and fucking telling him how great he is, like that he needs that all the time, that they need to be sleep, they need to drive him to the hospital, like all this entourage shit was really interesting to look at. And I also think like, kind of what I love about the movie is the light touch, because Priscilla Presley herself, who is an executive producer, and you know, the book is based on her, she has a very different understanding, and rightfully so, of her experience. She's like, oh, it was a little weird, but not that much. Like, you know what I mean? She like, she thinks it was a mostly normal relationship with some odd stuff in it. And like, Elvis was a difficult man and stuff like that. So I think that like, so the way that Sofia Coppola frames that, like it's a scene where she gets hit with a pillow. It's a scene where a chair goes right near her head. Yeah. And it's like, you can read that to one of two ways. Like that's as violent as it ever got, or more than likely, that is just the tip of the iceberg of what we're seeing. You know what I mean? And like, I think that's sort of the way she kind of plays it, the way that the dreaminess of the movie allows for a lot of room in a lot of that kind of stuff.
Dude, speaking of dreamy, her getting a haircut to the music of fellow Purchase alum, Dan Deacon.
Totally shocked.
Isn't it cool? It's just cool, everybody. Yes. Like, that's great. Other thing about Elvis's buddies that I had a real like instant one-to-one connection I made in my brain because of the way they were so easily excitable and everything. Come on, E! They reminded me so much of the way Billy Zane, Casey, so I can't think of the other two guys.
Back to
the guys who are Biff Tannen's buddies.
Yeah.
Just that same kind of like, come on, Biff, what are we going to do? Get out of here. You know, like that. It just, something about the dudes in this movie captured that like, excitable teenage boyish shit that like never had to leave those dudes because they were just Elvis's buddies and everything was fine. Like it brings up so many questions. Like if you're a hanger on of Elvis like that, did those guys have jobs?
No, was that the job?
You're just kind of always hanging out at Graceland.
You might have a title of some sort, but it means nothing. Like he might have thrown you something to put on your resume.
It reminds me of a sketch that is probably not very good, but I remember very clearly SNL Tiny Elvis with Nick Cage. And it's just, it's the gag is Elvis is very, very small, like 3 inches tall. And it's him and his hangers on, and they're all like, he's like, man, look at that chair. That chair is huge. And like, you're totally right, oh, Tiny E. Yeah, Tiny E. And it's
Tiny
it's that.
E.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, fuck. Yeah. Man, Matt, remember when they had good ideas?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
Yeah, I am really curious to see where this goes, like, you know, as far as Hollywood's Biggest Night, maybe some critic circles awards.
Sure.
Because it's just nice that, like, it feels like she's back, like, yeah, on the rocks. Someone was saying Sophia got a couple of secret movies under her belt. Not that close, but On the Rocks was just like blown by. And I do think there's good stuff in there. But like Beguiled was like, that was a movie with big stars in it, put out by a big company. And it just totally, everybody kind of was like, oh, very nice, Sophia. You made another movie. And
I think
it's totally worth watching, too.
It's a really good movie. I think it was also, I don't know, like sometimes like the remake thing does just trip you up. Like, because that is one of the, I think it might be her only movie that is a remake. Like,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Like everything else seems either like very personal or like a major like figure, like a quote unquote biopic that's not a biopic, like Priscilla, like Marie Antoinette. Right. So it just felt like an odd duckling in her career to begin with. But it is, it's a very good movie. And the original for fans, the Don Siegel original with Clint Eastwood, also very good.
I still got to see that.
Really worth your time.
I mean, it's just crazy that you had like Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, Colin Farrell, Elle Fanning, like, you know,
it's a big cast.
Names, yeah, you know, yeah. And just the world said no to the Beguiled. Kind of weird, whatever. We went long on that guy, so we should hop over to a completely different speed. Mike Flanagan's The Fall of the House of Usher. You can catch this right now, of course, on Netflix, streaming in its entirety here. This is basically like his Poe mashup show. I think it's like kind of right in the middle as far as Mike Flanagan stuff goes. I don't think it's bad, but I don't think it's up there with some of his best stuff.
I kind of agree with you. Although I think that I like the campiness here. I like it. Just it kind of knows what it is in a way that I think Hill House is probably better, but the ending is so much worse that it actually kind
that's
of
true.
It elevate. Like I think that this show has a much better idea of having fun in this very very macabre way that I find more refreshing than something. Trying to poke at something so deep, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. I think Hill House also has a freshness to it that, like, by now we know the Flanagan style, we know the Flanagan way of talking. We know all this stuff for better and worse. So I think what I like about this is its directness. I like that it's just kind of, like he's just kind of going for it. Like when you see the pictures with Carla Gugino, not to spoil anything. You are kind of like, oh, he's really, are you really doing this? Okay, buddy. Yeah. Sure, fine, do it. I'm up for this. My biggest problem with the show is how I just know from the first episode in, I just could tell the whole pitch was Netflix went to Mike Flanagan and Netflix was like, we need a Succession. I don't know. I don't care what it is. We don't care what. We're asking a couple of our guys to see who's got the, you know, who has the idea. Sure. We need a Succession really fucking badly. And when this show cues closest to that show, I get really like disinterested. Has a lot to do with the Tamberlane character.
Yes.
Yeah. That is C grade Shiv. I'm sorry. Like it that's was. Just what it is. There's no other way to describe what that whole storyline is.
You know what really sealed the deal for me with that though? Cause you had said that and I was like, all right, it's a rich family. Fine. I'll give it to you. But the Tamerlane episode, and again, not spoiling anything. She's like giving a presentation, like they're launching a product,
the gold
and the launch goes poorly. And I was like, all right, now Chris was really right. Like, yeah. That was, yeah. That's what 100% that shit right
it
there.
It is almost exactly the scene where somebody plays Nirvana's Rape Me while she's it is almost exactly that scene.
Yes, that's the exact thing I was referencing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like that actress. Look her up. Samantha Sloyan. I liked her in Midnight Mass quite a bit. She's another Flanagan regular. They all are.
Yes.
I think that because the cast is so deep and there's so many different characters, they are just hit and miss. So the episodes are kind of hit and miss. I think her episode's a miss. I wasn't crazy about Mrs. Flanagan this time around. What's her name?
Oh, I'm Katie rarely. In the plus for that. I'm sure she's very nice. I liked
Henry Thomas. Yeah. I loved Battlestar Galactica's Michael Trucco as the crooked boss. It was fantastic. I like young Madeline. I like old Madeline. And of course, Bruce Greenwood as Big Daddy Usher.
He's the best.
And you know what? Like those speeches are overwritten. Holy shit, are they ever? But I just kind of like watching that guy work. I just give that guy an axe and a fucking forest to cut down and I'll watch him do it.
Dude, I completely agree with you. And I think because you have this Bruce Greenwood performance in this show, he's not the only one that's getting the Flanagan marathon monologues. Yep. Like they all have them at least once. And Bruce Greenwood is the absolute goat of making that shit not sound obnoxious.
Yep. Yep.
Because, like, I don't know, like, my ear is really tuned for dialogue. And, like, when stuff like that keeps running on and on, like, you can tell who can handle that and who cannot. And, like, yes. Greenwood makes it feel so, like, not artificial versus, like, some of these other characters, they have them go off on a rant here. Yeah. And you're like, oh, this is, like, high school drama production.
Yep.
Level.
I think Carla Gugino is excellent in this.
She is very good.
Like, she's been in all these Flanagan things, and I think this might be her best. Like, and he gives her a lot to do, and she does it really well. And I think probably my favorite scene of the whole series is her scene with Mark Hamill. And Mark Hamill, by the way,
ooh, yes,
fucking incredible. I love this voice he's doing. I love the weird, twisted nature of the guy who's walking around like this and just doing the thing. He's so fucking good in this show. Ugh.
I just like seeing him doing something different. Like, just this is not anything else he's done. Like, that alone.
It's amazing watching him do. I mean, because when you see him play Skywalker, he's just talking like Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
So it's awesome to see him doing physical and voice acting at the same time.
Exactly.
And this character, this Arthur Pym guy, if he wasn't such a successful lawyer for the Ushers, scumbag kind of character, the physicality, the voice, the dress, Hamill is playing like a grade A legendary New York bag man guy. Yep. You know, it's a guy that you would see talking to himself at Film Forum.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But like, it's just, it's rocking ass in the show. And like, I think this is one of the biggest downsides of the strike is that this poor bastard could not be plugging the hell out of his excellent performance on that show.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is the Greenwood Gugino show for the most part.
Yep.
I love Carl Lumley.
Yeah,
he's fantastic as the lawyer.
Dupin.
Dupin. Yeah. He also, this is something I didn't know, and it took a minute for me to figure this out. Mike Flanagan must be a very big Reacher fan, as I am. Because young Madeline is a major character, and young Dupin is also a major role in Reacher as well. I don't think they can actually bring in Reacher because the guy just throws everything off the size of the fucker. Like, he can only be in Fast and Furious movies because otherwise he just doesn't look right.
Yeah, he also loves Battlestar Galactica. You've got, Michael Trucco. You've got Carl Lumley. You've got, Mary McDonald. Her character is a bit batty and it kind of comes in and out, I think. But when it hits, it hits, I think.
Yeah, you needed her a little bit more in the middle to get like her real, like you get at least the scene where Roderick is like explaining his thinking and over the last couple and what he regrets and what he doesn't regret. Right. You don't really get like the little scene with them in the last episode. You kind of get that, But she needs that for herself too. Like, I think it's just a character they didn't know what to do with, and they thought like just making her more like Arthur would make it seem like easier to buy him and this evil part of their corporation. Like, sure. Just as, like, we shoot people. We have this international syndicate of like fucking, you know, assassins.
I will say, right? By the way, oh, holy shit, by the way, Andrew, your dream came true. The what? Life of Chuck is Mike Flanagan's next movie. It's a movie, by okay. the way.
Ooh, all
it's
right,
a,
I like
it's
that.
A Stephen King adaptation. We like that. Check mark, check okay. mark. Tom Hiddleston is the lead, so that's cool. Bring him into the all world. Right. Hamill is back. Samantha Slowian is back. Michael Trucco is back. Heather Langenkamp is showing up. We've got Karen Gillan is coming back okay. from Oculus. And because you demanded it, Andrew, Matthew Lillard is in this production.
No!
I'm not kidding.
Yes! Fuck yes. I'm so happy for that dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Is the girl from Dr. Sleep also following through? Because she's good as the granddaughter as well.
Kylie Curran, yeah. Or Curran as Lenore. She was also Abra in Dr. Sleep. I think she's awesome. Her fucking going toe-to-toe with Henry Thomas, fucking telling him off in one episode was really, really... I mean, she's great. Yeah. I was so happy to see pop up in this. Has kind of like the most heartbreaking part of the show.
She does. She's like the good one of everybody, which is the sad thing. I fucking... Yeah. And I think that's what's kind of cool, too. Like, I think that like sometimes Flanagan goes a little too light on his characters. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think this show's pretty brutal. You know what I mean? Yeah. It actually...
Yeah.
The point of it, which you find out, you know, sort of two-thirds through, which I won't spoil, is the point of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And there's no going back. You know what I mean? Like, because I think that like the end of Hill House, which really irked me and still does, it was this really scary show about like, and there's that one great episode where the girl was being haunted by herself the whole time. And like, that was really disturbing and chilling. And then at the end, they go Beetlejuice, where it's kind of fun to be a ghost. And now we're all back together again. I'm like, that's not what you just set up for fucking six episodes. I'm sorry.
Nope. I spent like, you know, however many episodes being like totally shit scared that whole time. And then like, it's a ghost party at the end. Like, we're dancing and it's all, what a reunion. This will be.
Exactly.
An afterlife. You know, like, what? It's very dumb. This, I think, sticks the landing much better. I thought Midnight Mass stuck the landing.
That's probably
really
my favorite pound for pound Flanagan property right now is Midnight Mass.
I think Midnight Mass is the best overall Flanagan product because it, like, it's... This, I think I like this better, but only because he's trying more here, I think.
Yeah.
Midnight Mass is so tight. Like, it's very, I mean, like, yes, it is essentially Mike Flanagan does Salem's Lot, but like, it's a good alternative to that. It's a good version of that. And I don't mind that so much. But this one, he's actually like trying to reach outside his comfort zones in a lot of ways. Sometimes it's very cheesy. Sometimes it really works. I like that more than one that just like plays completely by the rules and just does it very well.
Yeah.
That's just my general feeling on things.
Totally. Well, I am fucking excited as hell for, what is it called? Book of Chuck?
The Life of Chuck.
Life of Chuck. Oh, okay. I'm very excited to see what that is. Yeah. You know, I'm Flanagan as a dude. I will always give a chance. And I realize I totally whiffed on, did either of you guys watch that, what is it called, The Midnight Club?
No, I didn't. Watch a second of it.
It's like terminally ill kids telling each other spooky stories or something.
Yeah.
A lot of the same folks are from the stable are in it, and I was like, I don't know, I don't owe it to the guy, but I just feel like as some sort of Flanagan television completist, I should check it out. Well, that's gonna do it for this week, folks. We ran a little long. We hope you're enjoying the feed here. Now, of course, it's only Monday. A lot of great content coming your way, such as tomorrow. Folks, We Love Movies Month is in effect all of November. Yeah. On our Tuesday releases, we're not doing a We Hate Movies episode. It's We Love Movies. Yeah. And Steve, what are we kicking it off with?
I hope I'm right. It's Psycho.
Ding, 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 ding.
Nice work, Steve.
We record a lot of stuff. Yes. Yes, that's coming out. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was crazy. This was a really good one.
And, you know, you can get that wherever you get pods on Tuesday, or if you hate them commercials, ad-free, We Hate Movies episodes, Tuesday release episodes, I should say, for this month, on the Patreon at the $8 level or up. You can listen to all the same great content without any of the commercials. And also on Thursday, Chris Cabin on that Patreon, something else is dropping, something sexy.
It's going to be a Melrose 210. Yes, once again. And we are welcoming a friend of the show, Dean Cain, to the program.
No, a lot of Dean Cain conversation.
Yes, way more than I thought. yeah, he's in the 90210. He's quite something.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Steve?
No, we talk about how hot Dean Cain was in that episode. And he really was, folks. He really was.
Gorgeous man.
Truly was. Him in his Wisconsin t-shirt or whatever he's wearing there. So check out all that stuff coming to you this week, gang. Thanks for tuning in to the feed here. We hope you have a good week. I've been Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Chris Cabin.
Have a good day, folks. Bye-bye.